America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation despite the fact that conspiracy theories have already begun to swirl around the Texas shooting. Conspiracy theory is kind of a nice way of saying just lies, malicious lies, sick lies, horrifying lies. What kind? We will get to that on the Michael Medved Show. But there's actually a better news, at least, in terms of some decent suggestions and some information about basically how we could do better. And that coming from various listeners, individuals, other nations, and even a suggestion from Jeremy Steiner, Pride of Hillsdale College, who, of course, is as caught up with this, at least as caught up with this as anybody else. He's a father of two daughters, wonderful daughters, outstanding daughters. And anybody, particularly anybody who's a parent, anybody with a soul has to feel outraged by some of this and the reluctance to address it reasonably. And how do you address it reasonably? Well, okay, just for a point of reference, I have never lived in Israel for any extended period of time. I've been there many, many times. But people hold up Israel as a country where people depend upon firearms. They need firearms as part of what you learn about in the Army. But the fact that you serve in the Army does not give you a free or certain ability to have firearms after you are done with your service. There has to be a reason that you need the firearms. And the fact is that people are very impressed. Sometimes they will see people who look like civilians who are shouldering significant weapons. They will be often M16s, which is sort of standard for the Israeli army. But they happen to be active duty personnel who are off duty, who are, for instance, in my nephew's wedding, he was in active duty at the time of his wedding. Since then, he's now busy raising a family, seven children, thank God. And he's an attorney in Israel. But the idea is he came at his wedding. There was a whole group of his fellow active duty soldiers who were dancing at the wedding with guns over their shoulders. And it was not to celebrate the guns. It was because that's regulation. You're not supposed to go out when you're active duty military personnel without a means to defend yourself. Okay, the preconditions for obtaining a personal firearm license in Israel. An individual who is listed by the Ministry of the Interior as a citizen or a permanent resident and who has been in Israel for at least 3 years prior to their application for a firearm license. The Firearm Licensing Department can grant a license to a citizen or permanent resident even if they have not spent the last 3 years in Israel, on condition that the individual has served in the Israeli military or national service. Two, an individual with at least a basic knowledge of Hebrew, the ability to answer questions, follow instructions, and complete forms is required. The applicant's level of Hebrew is evaluated by a firearm clerk. Number three, minimum age requirement, a citizen or permanent resident of Israel who has completed compulsory military service, age 18. A citizen or permanent resident of Israel who has completed 2 years of national service, age 21. This is the ages at which you can first apply for a firearm license. An Israeli citizen who has not completed military or national service, as per the above, can only apply at age 27. A permanent resident of Israel who does not have citizenship and has not completed military or national service can only apply at age 45. A health declaration must be signed by a medical doctor. A completion of the required firearm training, including theoretical exam and practical shooting requirements, as per the firearm training ordinance of 2018. Now, do those restrictions on firearms, does that sound impossible? It surely contributes to the remark, despite the terrorist threats, the remarkably low murder rate in Israel that has been there in the big cities in Israel, in Haifa and Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. It's been there for a long time. There is also this, and it came in from a listener down in the L.A. area named Talby, who we know. And Talby had this to say, and I think it's very important. She was actually talking about the whole tradition of military service, and it's important that we had in the United States. She says, "Hi, Michael. I can't stop thinking about this idea in my head after yesterday's school shooting. When I was growing up, all of the 18 through 21-year-olds who seemed to be the perpetrators of these heinous acts were drafted, or they signed up for military service. Everybody had a draft card. Well, they had some very strong role models while they were there, and they learned great discipline in the military. Then they were given the opportunity to go to college paid for by the government in exchange for their service. I'm wondering if that's something we shouldn't look at again." And it is fascinating. Look, I think it's a wonderful thing that we have stopped the compulsory military service. But a more widespread military service, when you have idiots like this Mickey Dolenz in Oklahoma calling for mandatory vasectomies for all young men. Military service isn't the equivalent of a vasectomy, but it is a very, very big means by which people learn maturity and responsibility. And the idea that manhood does not involve going into a school and killing 11-year-olds or first graders, as in the case of Sandy Hook. And that goes to another point that I mentioned. Jeremy Steiner, Pride of Hillsdale College, had suggested, if you look at the profiles of all of these killers, are there any of them who participated in sports? And apparently not. If you think about it, if you think about the killer in Buffalo that we had just learned about, if you think about this hideous killer of the Parkland school, of the killers at Columbine. In all of these well-advertised shootings, none of these adolescents were on the football team, or none of the adolescents were on the lacrosse team, if you have one, or doing any kind of organized sports. I mean, women's sports, well, of course, there are no women who are among these shooters. But is there something about the kind of discipline that is required to succeed in any sports team, the kind of camaraderie that you are likely to get? I do think that, leaving aside all of the tremendously wealthy, glamorous, famous athletes who are out there, one of whom made a very fine comment that we will get to. It's Charles Barkley again. But given the fact that there is a lack of people with any kind of sports background among the shooters, doesn't that argue for its usefulness? We'll be right back on the MedVet Show.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show.
On the Michael Medved Show, I won't do a Golden Turkey Award because it's too serious. But there's a piece in Associated Press about conspiracy theories swirl around the Texas shooting. And they say in the account, and let me tell you, one of the worst promulgators of this kind of conspiracy theory is Paul Gosar, a truly embarrassing, I mean deeply embarrassing and utterly unqualified for office, unsuitable for office, Congress member from Arizona, who may be one of the major targets, and I use that term carefully, of the January 6th committee and investigation, at least with the suspicion, as yet unproven, that he was giving guided tours of the future rioters who sacked the Capitol building before they did so, which, of course, would be a very serious problem for Dr. Gosar. He's a dentist. He responded to the mass killing in Uvalde, Texas, with this. He put people were wondering on Twitter who the killer was, and he said, "We know already, fool. It's a transsexual leftist illegal alien named Salvatore," spelled wrong, "Ramos. It's apparently your kind of trash." Now, I don't know if he was writing to someone in particular. He was trying to be funny. There is zero evidence that that Salvatore Ramos is a leftist, zero evidence that he is a transsexual, and zero evidence that he's an illegal alien. Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, at his press conference, confirmed that Salvatore Ramos was a citizen of the United States of America. In fact, I think there's some accounts that he was born in North Dakota. I don't know if that is true. But I know he's a citizen if Governor Abbott said so. And just that kind of attack, apparently this claim that he is transsexual, that comes, I think, along with the idea that he was made fun of, apparently, for wearing eyeliner one point in school. But part of the difficulty with that is that there was a photograph that circulated with the breaking news, the identity of the shooter has been revealed, saying the shooter was a femboy with a channel on YouTube. None of that is true. And it used a photograph that was actually a photograph of a 22-year-old trans woman named Sabrina who lives in New York City. Sabrina, who requested her last name not be published due to privacy concerns, confirmed to the Associated Press that the photo was hers, and also she said she was not affiliated with the purported YouTube account. Sabrina said she received harassing responses on social media, particularly messages claiming that she was the shooter. She responded to a number of posts. This is a horrible situation for our country. It's a horrible situation for anybody. People claiming that this is the work of some political group you dislike, that George Soros is behind it, or claiming that it's a false flag operation, which for years, Alex Jones claimed about Sandy Hook. I mean, aren't we better than that? Is there any justification? Has anyone there heard people who are trying to reach for this kind of nonsensical claim? There's also, again, the idea that there can be a sensible, civilizing, positive aspect to participation in sports at a very high level. For instance, there's a PA announcer for the Miami Heat, who actually took a political position toward moving forward with some common sense gun regulation reform. He had this to say as part of their playoff game, actually. This is clip three.
The Heat organization, the Boston Celtics, and the NBA family also mourn those who lost their lives in the senseless shooting that took place yesterday at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. Our thoughts are with the victims, their families and friends, and the entire Robb Elementary School and Uvalde community. Our hope is that the families, friends, co-workers, and loved ones of all those impacted by this tragedy will find the comfort and strength they need as they carry on in honor of those whose lives were lost. The Heat urges you to contact your state senators by calling 202-224-3121 to leave a message demanding their support for common sense gun laws. You can also make change at the ballot box. Visit heat.com/vote to register and let your voice be heard this fall.
Okay, fair enough. And by the way, notice the crowd applauding. And this is Florida. Florida actually responded well. Rick Scott, who was governor of Florida at the time, he's now a United States Senator, Republican, was part of the reform that did provide a model red flag law after Parkland. And again, it was bipartisan. So making that kind of announcement at a playoff game, there's probably more division on people between the Heat and the Celtics than between common sense gun regulation and the idea of doing absolutely nothing. So why is it, what is it about America that, and by the way, I'll take your explanations of it because I think it's a mystery and nobody's really solved it. Why is it that other countries that have suffered from serious school shootings in Norway and in Britain and Scotland, in Australia, in Canada, around the world, when there's a major school shooting, they've responded by tightening up access to very deadly firearms? Why is America different? 1-800-955-1776. And you can't say the Second Amendment because nobody would say, for instance, that having a more thorough background check was a violation of the Second Amendment. It clearly isn't under the Heller case or any other doctrine that's accepted by the courts. We'll be right back on the...
Love your show.
The Michael Medved Show.
I give it 4 stars.
And on the Michael Medved Show, we have an email that came in from Scott in Seattle. And Scott says, after Columbine, Virginia Tech, Sandy Hook, and now Uvalde, Republicans make common sense suggestions, such as armed security, single entry point, firearms trained teachers and staff. Why not do what we know would work? Do that first to protect our treasured children. Because it might work so well, it takes away a major political piece of the Democratic platform. Thanks. That's from Scott in Seattle. Scott, those measures that you're talking about, if you talk to teachers, there are some teachers who do want to be firearmed, equipped, and trained. And I think the same way they do with airline pilots. They don't require it, but they allow it with proper training. And I believe that's the way it works when you're a pilot on an airline. You can have, we have friends who been in the pilot business, if you want to get a special permit, ability to provide yourself with weapons protection, you can. But to require teachers to do it is not a good idea, especially when the priority should be not trying to take down a shooter, but to protect your students and get them elsewhere. Get them the hell out of a room where a shooter is if you're caught in that situation. In terms of armed security guards and single point entries, I think what's fascinating to me is they initially had said that Ramos, when he came in to the school in Uvalde, Texas, that he had overcome some kind of armed security personnel. There was no one there. It's not true. That was one of a number of elements of the story that simply changed because people got better and more reliable information. Another example being the idea that he had a body armor, that he was wearing some kind of protective vest that made him impervious to some of the shots that were fired in his direction. That was not true. He did not have body armor. He was not wearing any kind of protective vest. What he was wearing was a kind of vest that had chambers for all of the additional rounds of ammunition that he was carrying on his person. And then there is this Jeremy Steiner, pride of Hillsdale College. He's also pride of the Sons of Norway. And he points out that Norway has a longstanding tradition of widespread gun ownership. It is one of those countries. Switzerland, by the way, is another, with a very, very low crime rate and a very high rate of gun ownership. There are countries in the world that are terribly violent. Apparently, the one country in the world with the leading gun ownership is not the United States. It's Yemen. That's not a company you want to be in. That's not a competition you want. They're in the middle of a terrible, bloody, hundreds of thousands, literally, of victims in Yemen in a civil war. That's one of the reasons that everybody has guns there. But Norway, peaceful country, low crime rate. It now has, particularly after the shooting that killed 71 people in Oslo, Norway has some of the strictest gun control laws in the world. It is only possible to obtain a permission to own a weapon by having officially documented a use for the gun with the local police and taken extensive training relevant to the intended use of the weapon. Generally, this falls into two categories of permitted use: hunting and sports shooting. The first step to owning a firearm in Norway is to get a Vapenkort, a firearm permit that is specific to what you plan to use the firearm for. And fully automatic weapons, some semi-automatic weapons, and firearms disguised as other objects are totally banned under the law. Norway also has compulsory conscription, but not everybody ends up being drafted. Every year, those who are old enough to be drafted get a self-declaration form from the armed forces asking them for details about their physical and mental health, criminal record, as well as how motivated they are to join. Look, there's a huge question here, which is, why is it that other countries have responded so very differently to tragic cases like what we just experienced? And there's a piece by Max Fisher, and he writes, the world over, mass shootings are frequently met with a common response. Officials impose new restrictions on gun ownership. Mass shootings become rarer as a result. Homicides and suicides tend to decrease. After a gunman in Britain killed 16 people in 1987, the country banned semi-automatic weapons like those he had used. It did the same with most handguns after a 1996 school shooting. It now has one of the lowest gun-related death rates in the developed world. In Australia, a 1996 massacre prompted mandatory gun buybacks that resulted, according to some estimates, in as many as 1 million firearms being melted into slag. The rate of mass shootings plummeted from once every 18 months to, so far, only one in the 26 years since. Now, a lot of people believe they took away all the weapons in Australia. They didn't. They took away around a third of them, and it was, again, a mass buyback. And in terms of the results, you can find other reasons to think that those examples are questionable. But they're pretty dramatic. In Australia, the nationwide buyback ultimately took between one in five and one in three privately held guns out of circulation. It mostly targeted guns like semi-automatic rifles and many shotguns that under new laws were no longer permitted. The country also reframed gun ownership from being an inherent right, as it is in a handful of countries like the United States, to a privilege that citizens had to affirmatively end. Would that be to affirmatively earn? And obviously you could end it by destructive behavior. We're talking before about some of the credits that you sometimes provide for sporting commentators. Charles Barkley, as I mentioned, NBA commentator, spoke, I think, meaningfully, not about the Golden State Warriors, but about San Francisco. Listen, clip 7.
You know the bad thing about all this rain? It's not raining in San Francisco to clean up those dirty-ass streets they got there.
Say it again,
Chuck. San Francisco, you know, it's a great city. But all that dirtiness and homelessness, y'all, man, y'all got to clean that off the streets. I wish it, because it's raining like hell down here.
That looks beautiful.
No. You go three blocks over.
The Pacific Ocean is right there.
Go three blocks over by our hotel. Go three blocks over by our hotel. It's raining so hard down here. San Francisco need a good washing.
That place is Thrive City where we did the show.
That's a good part of San Francisco. Unfortunately, TNT put us in the bad part of the city.
Okay, there's an unusual situation where I want to pay some attention coming up to a big event in popular culture, because there's no question that people would like, I think, to get some kind of relief to take your mind off all of the horror that has been so dominant in the news. There's a huge new movie. It's considered very likely to be one of the big movies of the year, maybe of all time. It's the return of Top Gun. It's opening tonight, late at night, all around the country. We'll give it an appropriate review coming up on The Medved Show.
God help me, I'm addicted to
The Michael Medved Show.
Song you're hearing in the background is Danger Zone, with music composed by Giorgio Moroder and the lyrics by Tom Whitlock. It became a gigantic hit with Kenny Loggins, released in 1986, one of the several hit singles from the soundtrack of the 1986, it really was that long ago, motion picture Top Gun. Well, now Maverick is back. It's 38 years since that film came out, which is unbelievable. I mean, that's somebody's lifetime. And now Tom Cruise is back with Top Gun, Maverick, the very eagerly awaited and enthusiastically received sequel from Hollywood. Okay. The plot is pretty easy to dig into, especially if you've seen the first film or you have any recollection of the first film at all. The main thing here is that Maverick has now spent the Pete Mitchell, the main character played by Tom Cruise, has spent more than 30 years serving his country. And now he's going to move on to another phase of his career where he's actually going to be training the future generation of Top Guns. Now, those folks have all kinds of new handles, and they have all kinds of personality quirks, but they are not lacking in self-confidence as hotshot naval aviators. Listen.
Everyone here is the best there is. Who the hell are they going to get to teach us?
Captain Pete Maverick Mitchell. Let me be perfectly blunt. You are not my first choice.
With all due respect, sir, I'm not a teacher.
I just want to manage the expectations.
You think up there you're dead. Believe me.
My dad believed in you. I'm not going to make the same mistake.
Having any fun yet?
Are we having any fun yet? Well, okay. Obviously, the entire movie is not going to be about Maverick teaching people. Some of it is going to involve, well, at least a little bit of military action. And not to give too much away, but there is an unnamed enemy. Could be Iran, could be Russia, you name it. Somebody is developing illegal and threatening nuclear weapons, and it is up to a small detachment of fighter bombers to go after them. And basically to destroy a nuclear facility somewhere in the distance, offshore, off an aircraft carrier. Okay, Maverick is not only preparing the other participants for this raid, he ends up actually participating. Now, is the film watchable? It's highly watchable. Is it profound? Is it richly satisfying or emotionally coherent? Not particularly. For people who remember the old film, Val Kilmer, who is now a very high-ranking naval officer, makes an appearance. He's been suffering from illness, as the real Val Kilmer has from time and again. And this time, there's no Kelly McGillis. She was the love interest last time, playing a psychologist, I believe she was, known as Charlie. She's gone on to other pursuits other than acting. And Jennifer Connelly is now a love interest. What's interesting in the movie is they refer to her as if you're somebody you should know from the first film. She wasn't in the first film. And the character she has runs a bar and grill that is frequented by the Top Gun candidates, the people who are training to be these naval aviators. And yes, he is an educator in this film. Tom Cruise is sort of an indestructible actor. He, I think, is generally underrated. He's pretty solid at everything that he attempts, and that's the case here. Does the plot fall a little bit shy of full plausibility? Yes. Does it glorify the American military appropriately, particularly naval aviators? Absolutely. Are people who have any interest in this material at all going to enjoy it, if not love it? You bet you will. 3 stars. It's rated PG-13 for some fairly intense combat sequences, for some injury and difficulty, and yes, for some brief, lavish love scenes. Everybody seems to be having a good time. The director, Joe Kosinski, is a master of CGI and special effects. The film is enjoyable and will probably be a monstrously big hit. Okay, this is something. The Daily Mail reporting, cops reveal in Texas there was no armed guard on campus when the gunman walked through the unlocked door with his AR-15. The first officers on scene retreated when he opened fire on them and then waited an hour for SWAT to arrive. That SWAT was apparently part of the what is called Boer Pack, or which is a Boer TAC, pardon me, which is a division of the Border Patrol. I don't know if that's still operative. Salvador Ramos arrived at the elementary school at 11:40 on Tuesday after crashing his truck. Contrary to earlier reports, no school police resource officer there when he arrived. He walked unobstructed into the school. Then police arrived 4 minutes later. He shot at them, so they retreated, leaving him alone in the classroom with the children and teachers he killed. There will almost surely be consequences for those police officers. It took an hour for SWAT teams to arrive, to break into the room, and finally to kill him while the other kids hid. There is growing anger, yes there is, over the police response and the fact that some parents were held back from entering. They wanted to storm the school themselves, the parents, after showing up to find 150 cops standing around outside. Okay, one thing, and it's very, very important. We have a crime problem today that goes way, way beyond school shootings. School shootings, the most painful because we all love our children. School should be the safest, not most dangerous place in America. And schools generally are safe. What is not safe is neighborhoods and the ongoing slaughter that occurs in cities like Chicago and fill in the blanks, cities all across the country, where the murder rate is up tremendously. If this question about the behavior of the police officers in a small town of Uvalde, Texas, about 15,000 people, if those questions undermine support for building up and backing America's police for any reason, that will only make the serious problem much more serious. There is no way that any kind of gun reform legislation, there's some ways that you could make things better, of course, but it's not going to end the problem of the gang shootings, of the random shootings. The fellow who was involved in the subway shooting was out on bail, and he was released on $1 bail. This time he's being held without bail, which is appropriate for somebody with a prolific record. We have a problem of criminality in this country. It has to do with the opposite of a crackdown. What we have is a crack up, an inability to prosecute people. And yes, when we see instances like this of this monstrous evil of killing all these small kids, but what about the children who were killed in the crossfire of gang shootings all the time, weekend after weekend, week after week? That should be the major focus. Does that mean you don't do anything about improving gun regulation and improving background checks, which, by the way, is wanted by most NRA members? No, we could have this Memorial Day weekend coming up a historic session of the NRA, and I hope that we do in Houston, Texas. President Trump is going to be speaking there. Can everybody stop bickering and trying to blame something else and sign on for doing whatever can be done, agreed to on a bipartisan basis, on a non-political basis, for the sake of the country and, yes, for the sake of our children? Because to simply say that this is something we have to accept that something that we can't make better, that is to sell short the possibilities for reform and upgrade and improvement in this greatest nation on God's green earth. Let us hope for better times. We're back tomorrow with Ruben Navarrete, a book on the roots of war, and much more for this greatest nation on God's green earth.